Hello, welcome to another edition of the Triple Exposure Podcast. I'm Scott Bourne, your host, along with my co-host, Mr. Richard Harrington. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. We are going to talk about, that's right, time-lapse, because time-lapse is part of the trifecta of triple exposure. We've got HDR, we've got time-lapse, we've got panoramic photography. Those are the three things we talk about on the Triple Exposure blog at 3Exposure, that's the number 3Exposure.com, and on the Triple Exposure podcast. Today, Rich, we're going to just answer a couple of questions about time-lapse. I got a really interesting question that was pretty basic, but it got me to thinking that I can understand why someone who wasn't familiar with time-lapse would ask it. A fellow stopped me and said, Scott, what is the big deal with time-lapse? I'm not that familiar with it. Why do people do them? How do they use them? What's the application for this technology? I said, you know, that's a fair question, so we're going to start off by talking about that.
Well, I think the thing that's so attractive about time-lapse is that they just pull the viewer in. I mean, you know, by the very nature, I don't want to say they're technical miracles, but it's really impressive how you can condense a moment. And so when you could take the passage of time, something you normally can't see, and condense it into something, you suddenly become aware of the world or of an event in a different way. And so time-lapse are just so engaging to people who watch them. I mean, some people could care less, but you know, they're sort of the blending of miniature movie making with high-quality photography all in one, and they just pull people in, I think. I think it's really attractive, and people like it. I mean, we could talk about specific ways in which they're used, but I think that's the hook. You know, they just really capture an audience very quickly, and people are just intrigued by them.
Yeah, I think for me, the first time I saw a time lapse, of course, was as part of a motion picture. And it was a long time ago, back when time lapses were hard to do. And I really didn't know what it was, but it sure intrigued me. And for me, as a primarily a photographer first and then a video person, and of course, different for you, Rich, because you're kind of the other way around a little bit, but I look at time-lapse as something, the application for me is a way to sort of move the still image work that I do into at least the ballpark of the moving footage stuff. Because if I've got a bunch of stills in a traditional quote-unquote slideshow, that's great. But I started experimenting with inserting, not a lot, but you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds of time-lapse footage from the same location, and I noticed that the responses to my slideshows were just dramatically better.
Absolutely, Scott. Yeah, I think there's a lot of photographers who are interested in video, but shooting true video is often difficult on a DSLR. Certainly not impossible. The cameras are very conducive to it. But the reason why photographers are drawn to video is they want a sense of motion. Well, the beauty of time-lapse is you could take all of your photography knowledge, your sensibility of composition, and the motion will come from the passing of time. So the sun will move, the clouds will move, people moving through the scene. And so it just adds an energy of level, energy level to the piece that people really like. So, you know, there's so many great examples of time-lapse on the web. And as you search, you look at Vimeo groups around the time-lapse tag or search for time-lapse on a place like YouTube, you'll quickly find, of course, there's some better than others, but you'll quickly discover some really compelling stuff. And it just, I think in a lot of ways, especially for people who are into landscape photography or great outdoors or even urban environments, you really can just capture a completely different view of something. And it just really opens up your eyes differently to looking at the world around you.
I believe that the real advantage to time-lapse photography is it allows you to give still images what I like to think of as context. Because motion and time together do create context. Now, I realize I'm getting a little ethereal here, and I apologize, but I think...
Are you wearing a beret right now?
No beret at all, I promise.
Beanie?
No beanie. I'm not a beanie owner, but as much as I hate to sound like a beanie wearer, it is true. Context is important, and time-lapse really delivers that. I deliver photographs, for instance, and many people know I've gone to Bosque del Apache National Wildlife Refuge in central New Mexico for most of the last 20 years to photograph birds. I go every Thanksgiving, and it's where I got my shot, Cranes in the Fire Mist, that is one of my best shots ever. But it was only after the first time that I actually made a time lapse of what I was doing there that people got a real sense of the entire place, because the context in which I was photographing those birds was sort of lost on a still image. You see a close-up headshot of a Ross's geese or a sandhill crane. It's hard to put that in a place. But if you do the time lapse and you show the birds flying in and out and sitting on the pond and leaving at sunrise and those sorts of things, then people go, oh, I get it. And to me, that's the principal value of time-lapse photography.
Yeah, I really think it helps people see the experience of what it was like to be there. You know, snapshots and, you know, photos are great slices of time. And sometimes that's impressive to, you know, to capture that moment. But sometimes it's not the individual moment, but what happens. You know, the swell of a crowd going in and out to a large event, the rise of the sun revealing an architectural structure. These are all cool moments that have a greater cinematic quality that really feel compelling when you see the reveal over time as opposed to just freezing time. You know, I think there are times, forgive the overuse of the word time, but there are moments that you want to freeze time and there are moments you want to show the passage of time. And so just as photography is the act of freezing time, time lapse is the act of basically speeding it up to show the passage of time in a shorter period. And then it becomes much more interesting. I think it's kind of unusual how we as human beings have become so impatient that we don't want to put the work in to hike out to a location and climb the mountain just and get there at, you know, the crack of dawn to get the beautiful sunrise, but we love to look at that photo. Similarly, we might not want to sit there for 7 hours to watch the, you know, the sun slowly go down and the night sky emerge and the Milky Way light up, but we wouldn't mind watching that for a 1 minute experience as a movie. So I think both elements of traditional photography and time-lapse photography appeal to the human psyche, which is, I like to see pretty things, but I don't have that much time.
Well, it gives you the opportunity to do everything. It is the best of both worlds. With a still photograph, I can capture a moment in time that you would never see with your naked eye, right? I mean, if you look at video footage of an eagle swooping down and pulling a fish out of a bay in Alaska.
It's a giant streak.
Yeah, it's like you have this emotion and all these things happen and you get it on video and it's cool. But to get the eagle's strike, the talon hitting the fish, the splash, that is very cool in the strength of photography. However, there's no context. The time thing that you keep hammering on in time-lapse, well, it's in time-lapse for a reason. Time is very important to context and to understanding what's going on. So when we do the time-lapse stuff, we're able to really express that. I think we probably can go a little bit past this just talking about, you know, why people do it and what they do to even just start to, get into a little how. But first, a few more applications. We talked about slideshows. You can drop time-lapse photography into a motion picture, a video, a slideshow, etc. And they can just stand on their own. They don't even have to be part of something bigger. There's a couple of different sites, Rich, I've been to where they're nothing but time-lapses. There's no other product there. There's no movie in general. There's no still photography. It's just time lapses. And I end up being mesmerized by some of them. One is from a guy in Portland, and unfortunately his name escapes me right now. But my God, he just does some amazing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And Timescapes is another. Yeah. There's beautiful stuff out there. And I think, we use time lapse a lot of times to show progress. So we've used time lapses for things like architectural buildings to show something being constructed or to show the energy of an event. We've shot them for clients doing like walkathons and fundraisers as, you know, the crowd comes in, sets up in the morning and builds, then all the people arrive. It's really interesting, even for nature photography, to show something literally growing. Nothing says a time lapse has to be a single day event. People will take time lapse, plug the camera into wall power, and let it run for days or even months. So it's pretty interesting to show that. We'll drop them into things like DVD menus, or we've also seen them used a lot for things like retail installations, you know, where photography used to be widely used for in-store displays. You have so many instances of people using video screens and video monitors these days. So it's really becoming popular there, the use of time-lapse. And then there's the close cousin of stop-motion animation, which is really closely related to time-lapse. And there's all sorts of great productions there.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought that up. I completely forgotten about that. Yeah, stop-motion is kind of a distant cousin. I like that. We may eventually have to be for exposure.com.
Well, I have friends into stop motion. I consider stop motion to be like the sibling to time lapse. In time lapse, you're letting gravity or nature or the wind move things, and with stop motion, you're just using your hand. So you know, it's human assisted time lapse.
You gotta have just like world class crazy patience to do stop motion.
You do. We were actually experimenting just this past week with a write board style animation where a cartoonist is going to draw in a cartoon over time, but we film it with basically a time-lapse approach, and then we can control those frames back and speed up that process so that the very elaborate whiteboard illustration could match up to the words of the person talking. And that's for a corporate video client. So there's all sorts of things out there, and I think time-lapse is one of those things that I'm seeing a lot of demand in my video business for, where people are starting to see it more and more. So, you know, why shoot time-lapse? Well, another reason to shoot time-lapse is because people like it and they pay for it. And in fact, they'll pay well. If you are a stock photographer, there's lots of opportunities to sell stock video through a lot of the stock sites. And we're just seeing an increased demand. Plus, you have to remember, you're not just shooting video, you're shooting full still quality plates. So in a way, you're just shooting a lot of stills, and you could pull stills from those too to use for print application or anything else. I think another area where this is really booming is we're seeing the electronic publications really start to boom. So where Wired magazine before would be, you know, just a great, beautiful shot, now those shots are moving. And the Adobe tools for converting InDesign documents into apps, we're just seeing a huge boom where electronic publications are finally moving beyond being glorified version one HTML websites running in an app to actually being these rich multimedia experiences. And with that, we're seeing increased demand that don't just give me stills, I want time lapse or I want video to choose from. And I think that's pretty normal. You know, the Harry Potter moving picture magazine concept is not that far off.
I've seen it. Somebody handed me at the Barrett Jackson auction, somebody handed me some brochure that I almost threw away, and I opened it up and there was a little wafer thin LED screen that had about 6 seconds of video of a car moving, and I was like, whoa. I maybe this is old hat and I just found out about it, but my gosh. I mean, it was kind of gimmicky when I really ended up thinking about it. We're still at the stage where this is a gimmick, but you're right. The moving magazine. The moving magazine thing with time lapse is very cool. Well, let's just finish up this show by starting the next show. And what I mean by that, Rich, is let's end up here starting to preface a discussion we're going to have on our next podcast, which will be much more of the how. Let's just initially start by talking about some of the tools, just the basic tools, and then on our next podcast, we'll sort of piggyback off that, going from the tools into some technique. What do you think of that?
I think that's a great idea, because this way people can get started and start to dabble a little bit, and then they'll be ready to start to go a little more deeper.
The first question I always get is, do you need a special camera? And the first answer I always give is, no, you don't.
No, a regular camera is fine. The big thing that I look for is the buffer speed. Right. So, you know, depending on the type of time lapse you're shooting, I've really started getting into shooting raw time lapses lately. It certainly chews through the memory cards, but the flexibility in post is so much greater. And so, you know, any camera will work, but if it's got a decent buffer so you can shoot a handful of raw without it locking up on you, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and there are cameras, we should mention, that are more friendly to time lapse than others. I'll give you an example. The Nikon DSLRs, most of the current ones, have the ability to set timed exposure built right in.
Yeah, that's what I actually shoot. I shoot both Nikon and Canon. I use Canon a little bit more for video, although I've been liking my D7000 a lot lately. But yeah, I have three Nikons for that very purpose, that when I go time-lapse, I usually bring all three. And people like, why do you have three cameras? It's like, well, you know, I set one up, and then I'll get a different composition on the other, and I'll let it roll, and I just experiment. Because if I'm going to be standing around for a few hours anyways, if I can get three shots out of it, that's so much better than just one. And, you know, you go out with multiple lenses anyway. So I've stopped selling my old camera bodies and just, you know, sort of move them into time-lapse work.
Yeah, and we'll mention that next time on the show, that you can actually do multi-camera time-lapse. Now, we're starting to get advanced there, but you can do it. So if you don't have a Nikon that has this built in, you need to buy a thing called an intervalometer.
And we just did a post on that recently on the Triple Exposure website, 3exposure.com. You know, this is not an expensive item. You know, you can pick up generic ones or even the manufacturer ones. They're around $150 as sort of as a starting point.
Well, it depends if you get the manufacturer ones. If you buy the third-party ones, there's a company called Fotodio, I believe, F-O-T-O-D-I-O-X. They sell one for under $40.
Yeah, so that's true.
Yeah, so you can get one of these. If you have a Canon camera and you want to use the Canon one, you're right, it's about $150. But you can get one of these to work with pretty much any camera. And there's some other cameras that I really like. JVC has a couple of point-and-shoot cameras and semi-video cameras that actually have the time-lapse function as a menu selection. They don't call it an intervalometer. They just say, time-lapse, press here, and they just automatically will set up the time-lapse for you. It's very cool. So, and I've started doing time-lapses with video cameras, Rich. So whether it's a pure dedicated video camera, whether it's a point-and-shoot, a compact, a DSLR.
Yeah, but even the little GoPro cameras are pretty popular that a lot of people use for sports. They have a time-lapse mode, and we're seeing sometimes photographers going, you know what would be really cool? Let's set this up above my shoot for the day, and then I'll have a great blog post about what happened on the shoot that day, and to accompany the information about my shoot is this cool little movie that people will watch about what happened that day. It's just, it's fun. I mean, you could be as professional with time-lapse as you want, or, you know, you could practically run it off of your phone at this point. So it's certainly becoming widespread.
Well, I've seen the application of this in ways that blew my mind. Chevrolet at the Barrett Jackson auction in Orange County recently had a big display, and they had the 2012 Camaro, the special edition from the movie Transformers.
Did you order one already, Scott?
Yes, I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. Bumblebee, it was there, and then they had like 14 DSLRs. And you could stand in front of the camera and jump, and then all 14 would fire in sequence, and they made a little what they called a 3D movie. It was really just a little time lapse. But they were using just inexpensive cameras. Now, the one thing we also want to mention is just, you know, while there's good cameras, bad cameras, they'll all work. Some will make it easier than others, so if you've got the flexibility, you'll want to go with one of those. You also need a tripod.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you need a tripod and basically a pair of handcuffs for yourself, because I'm guilty of this too. You start to not trust yourself. So you want to lock the camera down, make sure that the tripod is solid, you know, and then possibly weight it down or put some little cones around it or grunt and keep people away from it. But you really want a stable platform as much as possible. I've shot time-lapse off of a boat with a little sway and everything else, but you can't just really leave the camera there. It needs to be as stable as possible, and you want to immobilize it, because anytime you don't, it'll create a little earthquake in the movie when the camera was touched. Now, there are ways around that, and there's fixes. I was playing the other day with a well-known photographer who had showed me some of his handheld time-lapse stuff, and we actually went into Photoshop and did the auto alignment of the frames to stabilize his time-lapse. But that's a lot of extra work. And there was a special circumstance for tight space, but you know,
we don't want
a stable platform, good idea.
Yeah, so any kind of tripod that's stable can work. And there are times when that could be something as simple as one of those little Gobo you know, devices. Any kind of stabilizer will work. It doesn't have to be fancy. It does have to be sturdy. The other thing you need is a big memory card, because you're going to be making lots of photographs, and you want fast write speeds, big memory cards. Now, at first, for beginners, Rich, I recommend just stay in JPEG.
I mean, JPEGs are just as forgiving as they used to be, and especially if you're not dealing with something like a sunset or a sunrise, which you could still get around. So we'll talk about that. The thing that a lot of people forget is that, you know, you can't really be in auto mode, so you're in pure manual mode. And for a lot of folks, that's a little scary. You know, you don't want to be in an auto mode, because otherwise you won't see the passage of time, because the camera will just keep compensating for you.
Exactly. And so we've covered – those are the basics: a camera, a tripod, a big memory card, an intervalometer if you don't have one and if you need one.
And a good book to read while you sit there waiting.
On the other side of the coin, in post, you need a way to put all this stuff together. There are a variety of tools, all the way up from QuickTime – Pro up to, you know, the Adobe Premiere products.
Yeah.
And let's just very briefly, as we wind up the show, Rich, let's just mention those. The quickest and easiest and cheapest way to do it is QuickTime Pro.
Yep. You spit out a series of images, and you just basically import the image sequence, and it makes a new movie, and that's perfectly fine.
And it does a pretty darn good job, especially if you're not doing mission critical work.
Oh, yeah.
And you just want to experiment with how this whole time-lapse thing works. I recommend not spending any money at first, just using QuickTime Pro, which is now free, and see what you can get out of that. Now, in between that and the professional step, Rich, are you aware of any software, you know, in between there and, like, Premiere Pro?
Yeah, there are. I actually favor After Effects more than Premiere Pro.
Okay.
Just because it has more flexibility. We did some basic tutorials on that on the site, and I'm preparing a few more advanced ones. You can use any nonlinear editing video tool. Most of them have the ability to import an image sequence and then cut it together, and that's fine. And that gives you the ability to sometimes change the speed or apply a filter. There are standalone time-lapse tools that are out there, shareware tools, especially on the PC side. I do find, and if you think that Photoshop is a reasonable expense, then you shouldn't have a problem with After Effects. It's basically Photoshop with a timeline, and you could assemble. For that matter, if you have Photoshop Extended, you can also make a QuickTime movie there. So if you don't have thousands of frames and it's just a few seconds, Photoshop Extended is a good way to make a movie too. And I recently got turned on to a really good plugin called GBD Flickr that works in After Effects and a few other apps, and it's really good at stabilizing flicker in time-lapse shots. So that's a cool thing too.
And the folks at Boinks, B-O-I-N-X software, make iStop Motion, which can be used to make time-lapse. There's some these products that are in the anywhere from $50 to $200 range if you want to mess with those. And many of the cameras, Rich, come with their own little time-lapse software. It's kind of clunky in most cases, but it will make a time-lapse. So we want to just reiterate, you're going to have a camera, a tripod, a big memory card, and some piece of software to figure out how to make this work.
And a lot of the software has fully functional 30-day demos.
Sure,
so
you can try
it. You can get by for about half a year trying out the different demos until you figure out the ones you want.
Right.
And then jump in. But yeah, you know, this is no different than anything else with digital photography. You might find yourself spending a little bit of money, but you hit it right on the head there, Scott. You know, you can get started in time-lapse photography with about $60 for an intervalometer and, you know, use QuickTime Pro. You know, beyond that, then what do you want to spend? You know, are you the type of person that has one lens that came with your kit and that's all you've ever bought? Well, you probably won't get into time-lapse, but at the same time, compared to other types of photography, you get some pretty big results for not a lot of effort.
Right. And if you're just bloody rich because you won the lottery, just buy After Effects and call it a day. All right. So here's the thing. That's where we're going to stop this show. In our next episode, we're going to pick up here at this list of things you need to do time-lapse, and we're going to give you some practical tips for things to do, how-to, things to watch out for, some tricks that you might use to get a good result. And I'm looking forward to doing that show. As always, we're still kind of new at 3exposure.com, so we're not promising a particular publishing schedule for the podcast. We are publishing Monday, Wednesday, and Friday guaranteed every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, three times a week at 3, the number 3, exposure.com. And we cover time lapse, we cover HDR, we cover panoramic photography. That's free. And you can also follow us on Twitter at 3exposure. Once again, the number 3, EXPOSURE. com. And if you have questions about all this stuff, send them to us via the blog, because we definitely will use that information to figure out what kind of tutorials you'd like and what we can do in the future to help you. Rich, when you're not on the show with me, where would you direct our audience to come find out what you're doing?
Well, if you're into Twitter, you could just follow me at RedPixel, RHEDPIXEL. That's my company. And I have the lamely named but filled with good stuff Richard Harrington blog, where I post a variety of topics, a lot of post-production for both photo and video type workflows, as well as just practical business advice, especially for those looking to move more into motion and video. So that's just at richardharringtonblog.com. And those are probably the two best places to find news and information. If you still like reading books, just type my name into Amazon. I've done more than a few, and they're all designed to help you out.
Yeah, and they're all very good. And you can follow me on Twitter, Scott Bourne, all one word, ScottBourne. I'm also every day, 7 days a week, over at photofocus.com. If you're interested in professional photography, follow me at goingpro2011.com. That's it. That's all the time we have on today's edition of the Triple Exposure Podcast. We are glad that you stopped by to chat with us, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Triple Exposure.